Hey guys, welcome to episode 276 of the podcast with my guest Alicia Lutz. I have a big smile on my face, but like you can hear the smile in my voice. What a pleasure and a joy. It was so fun getting a chance to hang with Alicia, not one, but two times this week. Check out my appearance on her fangirling show on Nerdist. She is just awesome and wonderful. I know you're going to enjoy this episode. I wanted to get a couple shout outs out there to Emma and Shannon for your amazing emails. I want to shout out Preston and his crew for coming to see the show that I did recently that Erica Rhodes hosts here in LA. And then I also wanted to just, for those of you who are listening to this, you know, this week as the episode comes out, if you're listening to it anytime, basically before Saturday, this upcoming, the 3rd of March, gosh, I hope that date is right. I'm going to be participating in Jimmy Pardo's Podcastathon. I have some items up for auction online right now that helps raise money for this amazing organization. It's such an honor to be involved with this show. I love Jimmy Pardo, as you all know. And if you have a chance to go on there and place a bid, either for you, if you enjoy Stand Against Evil or Legend of Korra, if you know someone who might enjoy a gift, I can't encourage you to go on there and check out the auction enough because, again, it goes to a great cause. So check that out and enjoy this episode. I will speak to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
It's so gross. I'm recording. There's no intro, obviously, but I really just said it again. I said like, what a waste. Like, well, our new friendship, what a waste that it wasn't recorded as we talked about.
This could be beautiful, beautiful content.
I mean,
for other people to fall in love with our friendship.
As I was feeling weird and sad about my sudden attraction to Paul Rudd, only when he plays a mutton chopped murderer.
We gotta love those bad boys.
Genetic
imperative or something.
I mean, when you feel, because when I hear other people say it, it's like when we all kind of joke about it, or I'm sort of outside of the joke and I'm reading about it or hearing other women joke about it, I think that I immediately bristle and I'm like, oh, listen, no, that's not because, And then something like that happens.
Paul
and
Rudd
I'm reminded,
is an asshole
in the movie. Like, oh, this is the best. Like, this is the most attracted to him I've ever been. There's got to be something wrong with that.
Just so confident and doesn't give a fuck about anything or anyone's feelings or their thoughts.
That has not translated to my attraction to real life people for sure. I do feel like in terms of like women that I've been drawn to, though, I will say I think that is like I don't feel like I've been drawn to bad boys at all, but I do feel like I've been drawn to aloof women. Like I think something going on there where like I think about some of my worst like girl crushes, and a lot of them were like, I remember I had this crush on this girl in college who her name was Bodhi, and she was just like,
that's,
she was like 6 feet
cool
tall. And she just had this like, who's a good person to compare her to? Just like basically anyone who does look like they belong in the sort of Game of Thrones slash like she could have played an elf in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, like a Cara Delevingne.
Just very
sort of.
Yeah. Like just completely still stoic face, like she could have been in a Renaissance painting. You know what I mean? And just like very tall and perfect posture, and just sort of walked through the earth like she was so, like she knew what was up. And I doubt very much that she did, but I was like, I want to sleep with you. Like I was just like, I want you all over me. I just want you all over me. And I do think that that's a kind of, you know what I mean? Like that there. So for some reason for me, the attraction is to, I guess like not bad girls, but like ungettable women, but
well,
not men at all.
Like, over the shit of the world, and they're just like, I am operating my own wavelength, and I'll see you later. I've always admired
that.
Which
maybe that's why people love Angelina Jolie too. I mean, she's absolutely stunning, but she does play
many, many characters who have sort of like, I've figured things out, you haven't, and also look at my pillowy lips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, you know, women are like, I don't know, I'm having fluttery feelings for Angelina.
Like, I want to kiss you. I want all these things are happening at once.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, so has that been true for you? Do you feel like this is very personal, but have even as a younger person, if you don't want to talk today, but like as a teenager, et cetera, did you feel an attract, like, do you feel like mirrored, that, you know, fake life and fiction and literature and film reflected real life, or were they separate like they were for me?
Gosh, you know, I'm trying to think. I had a crush on everyone. Like, I have crushes all the time, literally always. I'm so obsessed with other people, even though I'm terrified of them. Anybody that is completely different from me is fascinating to me, because I just, like, I have no idea how to have any chill. I'm very excited about everything. I'm just kind of like a butterball of gooberiness. And like,
I understand.
Yeah. And so anybody that's just like, oh, I can operate on a very low frequency.
Or like, I can answer with two words where it takes you 50.
I don't know that life.
I don't either.
So anybody like that, I'm just like immediately drawn to and fascinated by, because I'm just like, I don't, what is your secret? Can you please tell me? Because this is not great for all situations. It's just, yeah. I mean, although I have to say, most of my like very intense crushes were like the gooberiest dudes. Like, I was obsessed with Seth Green. Like, Seth Green, I had such a huge crush on him. And then,
he's delightful.
He just seems like a dreamboat. I loved him and like all of those sort of character actors from the 90s, you know, that were always the second, you know, the best friends to the guy that's going to win the girl or whatever. That was like my bread and butter. Oh, and musicians. I was hugely obsessed with like Brandon Boyd of Incubus was like everything to me, and Ryan Adams, and then like NSYNC.
Great.
Because let's, I was still a teen girl.
Yeah, like, let's get him in there. Yeah. Let's get him right in there. Who was your favorite NSYNC member? Did you switch around? Did you have like different faves?
No, it was always consistently Justin. It was always a Justin girl. I just felt like he was so talented, and his hair didn't matter. That weird ramen look that he had going for so long.
He just has so many
layers. My current roommate, Leah, she grew up across the street from my grandparents, so I've known her almost my whole life, which is amazing, and we have such a sisterly friendship. I love it. But she and I were both obsessed with NSYNC, and she was obsessed with JC, and I was obsessed with Justin.
Well, you can't be like the same person.
No.
I mean, I felt that way. I've talked about this before, but
it gets very
weird
and territorial, right?
I would, like, so many times I've said on this podcast, like, if someone liked something more than me or first, I was so deferential. I was like, don't worry, Eddie Vedder is safe.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You can totally have him.
Yeah.
You know, he's totally dreamy, but like, he's all yours.
Isn't it so funny how young girls get like kind of like weirdly territorial about that stuff, as if there's any sort of reality to the situation wherein, yes, you know what, you're right, your fan fiction is going to come true, and Justin Timberlake will be walking down the street in New Haven, Connecticut, and do a double take and be like, you know what, you're 16, but it's totally fine. I just feel a connection.
It really, the suspension of disbelief on that, I think you've nailed it, is like, there's something that's so important about that. And I don't know if it's like and you know, it's true for people of all genders the way they identify, but just in terms of and I guess I can't speak for asexuals, but I think there's an intellectual level to that even too, if it's like an appreciation of art or something. But just that if that becomes a sort of teenage version of the like playing house of being a child on some level, or like whatever mimicry we have of adults as kids, whether it's like a boy dragging a little doll around or whatever that happens to look like, then in teenagerhood, it sort of explodes into like the hormone realm. And there's some sort of like rehearsal, even if it means you're having sex with, you know, peers or whatever. But there's this like constant wheel turning that for many of us incorporates all those crushes and makes them feel really important. And that there is this sort of like, well, I would never, I mean, it's sort of sweet, you know, it's sweet in the sense like that it's like, well, I'm not going to take, I wouldn't do that to you. Like,
don't worry, Jonathan Taylor Thomas is yours. I promise. Although I did go vegetarian for 2 weeks because I was in love with Jonathan Taylor Thomas as a young girl. Yes. Oh my God. I read like an unauthorized autobiography and read that he was a vegetarian. So I was like, Mom, I am a vegetarian now.
And that's part of it too, right? Yes. Is that trying on of things and the way we form our identities, and it feels so precarious in that way that like, not to say that that's not still true. I mean, we can, you know, fall in love now and suddenly realize that, you know, we guess we love classical music because the right person introduced it to us or whatever. But then there's definitely that too. It's like, how much are you shaped by what other people are enthusiastic about? How much are you influencing other people at that time? And how much of it do you end up sort of abandoning because it was really just about something else versus how much you kind of tuck in and carry with you as you go?
Totally. I was like so very worried about my like love of nerdy things growing up, because I didn't really fit into like the nerdy crew. I was a theater kid that was really smart, and like the popular kids like really didn't know what to do with me. And I remember just being like, I'm gonna, you know, I feel like I was so many different people during that time, because you want to figure out like, okay, what is I feel like as a teen, you're like, what is the version of me that is like most palatable socially, but also like lets me be me?
Sure.
Edge, you know?
Sure.
I was like such a goth witch for a while and like a skater. I had JNCO jeans that I wore all the time with a Garfield shirt. Like, and Halloween earrings. Halloween earrings too, like cats and jack-o'-lanterns I wore in like June.
That's an amazing image.
It was a lot.
I could not have seen the Garfield shirt coming.
No,
I could not
have seen the Garfield. So many questions for young me.
Oh my gosh. Wait, where was this, I should say?
I grew up in Connecticut.
Okay,
actually.
Great.
Very, very Connecticut. I grew up in New Haven, and then I spent most of my time in New Haven because I moved in with my grandparents when I was around like 10 or so, and then lived in Branford, Connecticut from like, well, there was a time where we lived as a family some in Branford, and then ended up moving in with my grandparents for all sorts of fun reasons.
But, would you care to expound on any of those, or do you feel like no way, Jose?
No, I can totally, it's totally fine.
Okay. That sing-song voice is a dead giveaway. This is going to be perhaps uncomfortable.
He might be. My family life was like very kind of messed up and weird. And my father, short version, my father left almost like in the middle of the night, like up and left, like drained my mom's bank account. She was the one that was like working 100 hours a week. He was a mess pile for so many reasons, and he just up and disappeared.
Wow.
1996, never saw him again.
Wow. Good job, Dad. What a great
super winner
move.
There's so many reasons. Oh my God, I can't even imagine if he like ever heard this. It would be so wild. But
well, I have a surprise for you. Could you come
Daryl!
In here, please?
Oh my God. And I hope he brought the other Alicia Lutes too, because that would be swell. No. He has like another daughter named Alicia Lutes.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope, so not kidding. It's
wild. Have you two ever connected?
We've met, yes. Well, I knew her.
Why? Okay, this whole thing is so crazy. I cannot.
All right, strap in, Janet.
Yeah, I'm strapping in. I'm strapping right in.
So, yeah, my father was like having an affair while he was married to my mom, and had this, well, the thing that we found out later, much later, like literally in the last, you know, 5 years or so, is that she's our stepsister, not our half-sister. I have two younger siblings. But he told us that it was his. I think he thought maybe it was his. And he told me, because I was the one that accidentally let loose to my mother, that he had a girlfriend. And apparently that was a weird thing. I didn't know when you're like 9 or 10 that it's weird for your parents who are married to have girlfriends and boyfriends. Mm-hmm. I told my mom that he was like, he was missing for my great-grandmother's 100th birthday. And I was like, oh, he's probably at his girlfriend's house. And she was like, excuse me?
Oh my God.
And so happened after that. And my father was like, I literally named her Alicia to replace you. And I was like, devastated, obviously. he's not really good at emotions. Like, he's really not somebody who the world is. He is a victim of the world, you know, and he's just one of those types of people.
Have you couch diagnosed him? Have you been like, he's borderline personality or like, you know what I mean? Like, do you have fun running theories of like, that's what popped into my mind when you said that sort of like megalomania of like,
oh yeah,
I deserve better than this. And everyone's victim is very like border. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The whole thing is so complicated because he actually had a really fucked up upbringing. And I think it just sort of became like, as happens, deal, you know, like he was the only one of his siblings who didn't get beat because he was like a football star. And so, you know, I think he carried a lot of guilt for that. And then I think because of that, like, he just couldn't deal. And my mother is like a workhorse, like, get shit done, work 100 hours a week. You know, she put him through two different schools. She put him through HVAC school and DMT school. And he didn't do anything with either of them. Ended up working at the bowling alley, which is the local bowling alley, which is where he met his girlfriend, and everything sort of went from there. So it was super hectic and chaotic, and I wish I could remember why we got it on
Cool. Well, I just, there's just so many people who go through stuff with, particularly, you know, with parents and those kinds of, that sort of, as you said, like the sort of like ongoing chain of effects that happen when somebody experiences, like, it sucks that when someone hates themselves so much, it ends up hurting so many other people. That sounds terrible, but I wish you could privately, like, I feel terrible that you went through what you went through, and we need to break this cycle. And the cycle, if we can't fix you, if you can't fix you, then I wish that you could just privately hate yourself and not have that be a mess, an oil spill that just like poisons everything around you in these, you know, weird, unexpected ways. And like, but clearly he fucking hates himself. I mean, I don't know how.
Absolutely. He has to. I tried to get in touch with him a couple years ago. I was in Florida visiting some family, and it was Thanksgiving, and his brother had been talking to my mother for reasons. He got me in touch with my father, and it was the first time we had spoken and since 1996. So this was like 2 years ago. So it was a long ass time. And he, you know, said we were gonna see each other. He was so excited to hear me call. He loved me, blah, 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 the whole thing. He was like, I'm gonna call you first thing tomorrow morning. I'm gonna come to, I think I was in Fort Lauderdale or Orlando. I think Fort Lauderdale, actually. And the whole next day, I didn't hear it from him at all. Nothing. Which, of course. And so then I called back and just left like a very kind of like shitty voicemail that was like, well, didn't hear from you. Can't say I'm surprised, but I hope you have a good life or whatever. And he called me back and he was like, well, I was just really busy, Alicia. And like all of that. I was like, you couldn't text. You couldn't fucking text. Oh, you couldn't send a call. Like, you couldn't do any of the things to be like, hey, I'm too busy. Like, literally no. And he said to me, he was like, Alicia, I can't keep having this fight with you. And I was like, what fight? We literally haven't spoken since 1996, and it's like 2014. Like, I literally don't understand where you exist with this fight.
I was going to say, that's like when someone has built up like the termite's nest of his perception of reality to protect himself and think that everyone else is like, oh, poor me.
Yeah.
When really, like, at the core of that is like, oh, I hate myself. But how do you even, like, where do you go? Like, that's the most heartbreaking part with, especially with family, you know, was that feeling of like, oh, I don't foresee us ever being able to see this, a day the same way, a moment the same way, much less a relationship the same way.
Absolutely. Or,
you know, and that's really hard. Do you feel like do you have a sense of, I mean, we don't know this is happening when it's happening, when we have experiences like that, but looking back, do you have a sense of like, oh, I grew up harder and differently and faster in certain emotional ways because of that than people around me?
Oh, yeah. I had to grow up pretty quickly, I would say, for various reasons. I had several brushes with sexual assault when I was very, very little. And that really shaped me a lot. And then my parents' divorce, really, my mom had, like, she had to rely on me. And I was more than happy to step up. You know, I've always been kind of a caregiver in that way.
And your sister, your sister's older or younger?
I have two younger siblings. My younger sister Stephanie and my younger brother Eric. I'm the oldest. Stephanie is the youngest. Eric's in the middle. I was obsessed with my brother and sister. They really didn't appreciate how obsessed I was with them, but I lean into it still to this day. So I really like had to take care of that, you know, driving them to school, doing the whole thing. We were very lucky that my grandparents lived as close as they did, so we could like move in with them. We really like my mother. She worked so hard. It still blows my mind to this day, like how much she worked. But like really, because of that, my grandparents kind of raised us. So it was an interesting time because I really did just sort of fall into this role of like, oh well, of course, you know, like I'm the oldest, I got this. You know, I always really like taking on responsibility too. Oh, I always love feeling like I'm being helpful. So like as a young girl especially, I was like, all right, I got this. This is just like babysitting, but all the time, you know?
Oh, no. Yeah.
But, you know, it was cool because it was what it was, you know? And I think about this a lot, that I'm so fortunate that my father wasn't around. Like if he had been around, I don't know if I would have been able to go to college. I don't know if I would have had as much, you know, sort of emotional space to grow, because mm-hmm. he was just such a closed off, sad person. And I struggled a lot because I am very much like my father. I'm very emotional. I'm very sensitive. And I am constantly worried that I'm going to like turn into him. You know, I don't want to become like the self-victimizing person. And I don't want to ever feel like I feel like the world is doing something to me personally and specifically. I'll joke about it all the time on Twitter, right, but I don't mean it.
Right.
I feel bad for other Alicia and Haley because they had to deal with him as their father in their life, you know, and from what I have seen from the life that they have had to live, I think that I struggle with my relationship with them a lot because I want to be that sister. I'm always, you know, I want to be kind of mama birdie, but with them, it's really hard. I tried to talk to them probably when I lived in New York still. So probably like 2008, 2009, something like that. And, it was just really hard because they needed a lot of me, and I tried to give them as much of me as I could. But once I found out that Daryl, my father, was apparently, you know, sitting next to the computer, kind of what I felt so taken advantage of, and I felt really violated. And so, you know, I just had to say to them, like, I wish you all the best. You know, I'm always here for you if you need to reach out to me, but I just can't do this. It's just too hard. And that was like the scariest, hardest thing.
Good for you. Sure.
I just want to love people, and I just like want to give them all of me. And it's so hard when you feel like giving yourself to people is hurting you through no fault of those people's actions and what they do, you know? It's tough. It's really tough. Yeah. That whole side of my family, I have a very tricky relationship with.
And yeah,
it's been a constant process. So
God bless. You know what I was thinking, to take it to a lighter note, I was remembering that I'll go deep all day long for sure, but I was fondly remembering when we were talking yesterday, not on your show but before your show, about we were talking about foods that we had, like, some of us had come to enjoy as adults, and you were like, no I loved all that stuff as a youth, and we were like, oh, I was like, well, how did that come to be? And you're like, well, I was mostly raised by my grandparents, so I was just like into old people food from a very early age. I was like, that's into adorable.
It. I love that that ridiculous Twitter account, like 70s party or whatever. I don't know if you've seen
it. I haven't seen it.
It's all food from old 70s cookbooks.
Oh, wow.
Hideous. Uh-huh. And it's just so atrocious. It'll be like, oh, some jellied canned ham and pickled carrots. Oh, look, it's a bunny. And you're like, I've never wanted to eat anything less, but I kind of love it because a lot of that stuff and a lot of sort of those like weirder things are what my grandparents just like, canned everything, casserole it to death. Like, yes, that is what I grew up on.
Casserole to death. This could be its own like meme. It could be like its own cast.
Yeah,
its own
sounds hashtag. Like a really let's dope band.
Yeah. Hey, what's up? We're Casserole to death. Yeah. Did you have to? You didn't have to get like a job outside of yeah. just life, did you? Yeah,
so I did.
A high school job.
I worked for a little while at a Pier 1 Imports.
Great. Very Pottery exciting. Barn. I'm a Pottery
yes,
Barner.
Yes, nice. All right. I loved the customer service aspect.
I also love the customer service aspect. I loved retail and pretty things. I was yeah. all about it.
Look at these candles over here. Don't they smell amazing? And oh my God, if you put it in this holder and then you take I bet these you were, chains.
They must have just loved you so much. Your it bosses must have been like, we see you going on to be a district manager. Like, I'm sure they were like, we are going to just like promote and promote and promote. And
it was kind of a really weird place to work. The people there were all just like very over it. Like everybody that worked there was super over it. And I was just like so keen to just be like, oh, I'm hanging out with people and look at all these cool things. I would just buy all these things all the time. Like as a 16-year-old, I was like, this feels so adult. Like look at yeah. me and like the homewares.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And, but everyone there was like pretty... They didn't like the lead manager woman, and I never understood why until one time I like bumped into her by accident and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And she put me on bathroom only duty for like 3 weeks.
Okay.
I didn't stay there too much longer after that. I ended up working at there's an assisted living home care agency that my mom worked at, and they needed like somebody to like file paperwork in the basement, and it was more money than Pier 1. So I was like, all right, sure, I'll go sit in a basement for the summer, like whatever. I would do it quite frequently. And then I also had work study at school because I went to a private high school because I was bullied to death in middle school. Mm. And I just had to get out of there. It was not great.
Why were you a target, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Oh my God, I made myself a target. Like I, you know, and I'm fine with it, but like I was very loud, very chubby, very gregarious, very wanted to be everyone's friend, and like super nerdy, like loved school. I was just all of the things that you want to pick on, you know? Like,
well, yes and no. I mean, it just depends on the school, I think, a yeah. lot of the time too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and Connecticut's a weird place. Like, I feel very fortunate that I grew up there. It's a beautiful, beautiful state. Schools are like even the public school that I didn't end up going to is like amazing, but there's just like there's a lot of that weird sort of socioeconomic frustration that sort of trickles down into kids, especially with like, you know, labels, but also just status that happens in Connecticut. I mean, I'm sure it happens everywhere, but there's just something so Stepfordy about it in Connecticut, and it's so specifically insidious in this like. Kids very young learn very quickly how to be very passive aggressive to one mm-hmm, another. Mm-hmm. And also just like outright kind of just a lot of very angry people, which is super weird because it was just like a lovely little like Brantford is this lovely little shoreline town. It's where they like founded Yale and they mined the granite for the base of the Statue of Liberty. Like it's just yeah. it looks like Stars Hollow. Like it's this very cute, quaint little place. And it always surprised me how angry everyone is. I mean, I know I'm like a very not angry person most of the time, but like it always really blew me away how like the audacity. I mean, I see it now is like, oh, the audacity I had to like be this loud, fat, nerdy, you know, theater kid who like also ran for student council president and like, you know, was doing all the things. Like, I think it was just too much for a lot of people. And it's always tough when it's a lady because, you know, boys really don't like it when ladies are very loud, especially at that age.
Yeah. Know your place.
Yeah. So I ended up, going to a private high school, which I was very lucky to get into.
Was it all girl or was it?
No, it was co-ed. I don't think I would have ever really thrived in an all girl situation. I almost transferred, after my first year of high school just because I was very insecure. The school I went to is called Hopkins. It's in New Haven. It's one of the top 20 schools in the country. So it's filled with kids whose parents are Yale professors and, you know, different sort of like geniusy types. They had you know, tons of Wall Street people, you know, big real estate types.
That is, could not sound more intimidating to
oh
me.
My God. It was so intimidating because I'm just like this kid that was there on work study too, you know, from like a small family where literally like nobody in my immediate family went to college. Like no, I'm literally still like my mother, my brother, my sister, I'm the only one that's gone to college. And I'm the only one of my grandparents too. And it was just so intimidating to me because I was like, I feel like I come from such a different world. And it ended up creating such a weird dynamic for me because like, while my mother and my grandfather and my grandmother were, you know, they were very supportive of me, like educating myself, and they knew I loved school. They knew I loved to learn. Like literally I would wake up every day when I was very little before kindergarten and like put on my backpack, my first day of school outfit, and like stand in front of the mirror and be like, my name is Lisa Lutz and I'm ready for school with a lisp so and everything. Cause cute. Of course I did.
I wish I'd had that. Like that's what crushes my soul is the idea that you were that kid and that got like, could have been bullied out of you, you know, because yeah. I was so, I really had like the summer, like, oh my God, like the anxiety
yeah.
from such an early age of like, I'm going to have to go to school every day. Like I really was mm-hmm. very, I don't think people expect that. And I don't even know if back then, like it was understood, but I had no to conquer idea. So much daily anxiety about getting on a school bus.
Oh my God, me too.
So much, you know what I mean? And so, mm-hmm. but like, but the idea of you being like excited yeah. to get into that classroom, I wish I'd had more of that because
yeah.
I would have been so much happier. I mean, I would have, you know, cherished
it. It would have given you something
yeah.
to make
it. But if you had that
better.
Excitement and then it was shit on anyway, like I'm sure that's also not a great situation.
Not ideal. I mean, literally one of the kids that bullied me did murder somebody later. So
good
that's,
God.
Yeah, that's
what's
a real
the,
thing.
What was the, like the racial makeup of when people about it being white.
Very white. LOL. Very white. I'm from a very white town. I'm very lucky in that both Hopkins, where I went to school, is they made a very important point to like give back to the New Haven community. And that meant, you know, they gave a lot of financial aid and free ride scholarships to the local kids in New Haven, often kids of color. And it made my experience, I felt very lucky. Like if I had gone to one of the other private schools in Connecticut that are just absolutely lily white because it's like $50,000 a year to go to high school. I think it would have been a much different situation. But I've always felt very lucky because my family is, for as white as we are, you know, I have a cousin who's Puerto Rican, some cousins are Korean, and my cousin Aaron is black. And like, so I feel so lucky that I didn't have that hyper white typical Connecticut experience because it makes you so tone deaf, you know, to the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's super crazy. But that's, I think, also why I've always been drawn to like living in cities. And like even New Haven is a more diverse place than Brantford is. So yeah, because it's just when you know people that are different from you, like you learn so much more about yourself and the world and how people experience it. And like that to me is the most important knowledge I feel like you can gain, especially is when you're not in a learning situation like school anymore, you know?
I couldn't agree more. What were when you got to high school, who did your friends end up being? Like, who were you sort of drawn to, and how did that all kind of, was it mostly theater kids?
Yeah, mostly theater kids. I did, my closest friends were, my four closest girlfriends were Aaron Johnson, McAllister Windham. I'm saying all their names just in case they hear this, just because it may make me really happy.
I got to think about McAllister Windham for a second. That's
Windham,
a pretty great name.
She's so cool. She's such a badass pediatrician at Duke now. She's pregnant. It's very exciting.
Congratulations, guys.
Congrats, McAllister. Emily Coe and Alex Bigler. Those were like my four main girlfriends. And, you know, I also had some really good friends, like my friend Sarah Torcini and stuff like that, where we did theater stuff. But I was kind of all over the place because I love people and I don't want to get stuck in one bubble or one sort of way of thinking. And so, you know, we had to do sports, which LOL forever. I am not a good sport person, but you had to do it or like take a gym class. So, you know, I did because I'm tall. I did basketball and then I was out in the outfield for softball
I couldn't. I mean, in high school, you were able to take dance instead of gym, so, cool. so I never had to take PE high school. And now I sort of like. So, I mean, I don't do groups, but I have friends who people who like the girls who are on the Pistol Shrimps. Like they have this mm-hmm. wonderful, funny, great women who are playing basketball all the time. I have friends who are on softball teams.
Yeah.
I've figured out that as an only child, I am very much like sports for me is like hiking quietly. Yeah. Or yeah, like with one or play like hitting a tennis ball back and forth with one other person. Mm-hmm. It's more meditative or like riding my bike and stuff. Yeah. I don't have that draw. I don't have the drive. No. And I don't know if it's because I didn't really play team sports when I was younger, but that's not.
I hated it.
Could not have wanted to get out of it less. Like, I mean, yeah. more. I just could not stand it.
Athleticism in general is just not my bag. Yeah, I would rather go on a hike and then like maybe read a book.
On the hike, if there's a way to do that
safely. Or just like, you know, stop halfway through the hike, read a little bit, you know, whatever. The sports thing was definitely more out of necessity of you have to do this to graduate, right. sort of thing, which was great, you know, be active, whatever. But
oh my god, I'm sorry, I just realized that I forgot that I almost almost couldn't graduate because I didn't realize I was missing a semester of
really
PE, and I just flashed the fact that I had to do independent study PE. I just realized I had to keep a journal of like my activities. So I was like, I rode my bike 2 miles. Oh, I did six sit-ups. And that's like, I had that got assessed and graded so that I could pass. I fucking completely forgot about that.
Oh my God, that's so
funny. I'm sorry that interrupted you. I completely forgot about that. And I just had this like weird flash of the moment we found, like we realized, like someone was looking at my transcript was like, we have a problem. And me being like, we what now?
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Oh. And then we're going to solve it by, okay, I'll just ride my bike.
Independent study sounds really good. So even that's that amazing. Was like, yeah, I really skirted that one. Oy. Okay, please continue. Sorry. Yeah.
You're totally fine.
That's
I was all over the place because of that. Because I had friends that did
that's
sports.
It's good to have to do stuff you're not great at and stuff. Because that's the other thing mm-hmm. is like, I've had conversations like this about this before where if you can continually avoid things you're not great at, as you grow, it's really hard to fail.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I think are things I wish kind of that I would have been made to do things mm-hmm. that I was bad at, because there were plenty, but I got real sly about like, how can I not have to, you know,
on over here
instead
not
of, yeah,
this.
Instead of like getting good at failing early and being like, oh, this is how you grow. Cool. This is how you toughen up and don't hate yourself when you do something poorly.
Right.
That would have been good to know.
Got it. You know? Yeah. No, I feel very lucky that I failed so much as a kid. I was so okay with that. I would like, you know, at first I would try out for plays and stuff. They'd be like, no, you're just like kind of a lot. And I'd be like, that's okay, next time. Like I was just always like, whatever. Like I'm walking after school special. I know exactly why I got made fun of all the time, guys. But it was, it was just, I think it's really important to learn to fail. And it's something that I constantly feel like I also need to relearn. Because, you know, like even doing the show Fangirling now, like when, you know, a guest thing doesn't work out or, you know, a segment doesn't come together in a way that I want it to, like I get like, oh, God, like it's, you know, it's not okay. And then it's like, it's okay. It's okay. Like, don't forget, like everybody will have, you know, like a bad night of comedy or a script they don't love or, you know, just a performance they're not super jazzed on. Like, it happens to everyone. And it's just, like, very human.
But isn't that also, like, the Anne of Green Gables effect, which I don't know if you're familiar with Anne.
Oh, yes. Anne with an E.
We're a real kindred spirit situation, which is that if you are a person who's fortunate enough to have the enthusiasm and the, like, falling in love with pieces of life, that you also have to deal with the depths of despair over things that maybe you don't need to feel that about either.
God.
And, like, kind of trying to mitigate that is still, like, you know, and especially if you get into the extreme version of that, which of course can be depression and anxiety stuff, it's extremely powerful mojo and it's very hard to combat. And so I'm not like, I don't have hypomania, I'm not bipolar, my heart is like, goes out to anybody who has even just the chemical makeup have the most extreme high and the most extreme low you can have, because even on like a quote-unquote normal level, it's so hard to keep making peace with that over and over again. And I think part of the making peace with it when you get older is not only do I can not only can I accept that I, you know, love and then I'm shattered, but like I also maybe need to try to pull up from some of those like low frequencies.
Oh my
like
God.
I can't
yes.
I even if it means like maybe there's a collapsing a little bit of the range, like maybe I'm not going to be ecstatic and over the moon and like losing my mind euphoric about something if the trade-off is like I don't feel shattered when I ask someone to be on my podcast and they say no and I think they hate me.
Yeah, they're like this is
about me. I'm not good.
Schedules.
I didn't do this right. I'm clearly like if I were better, if I were, you know, more important, instead of going like, oh okay, boy, that can't matter, like I can't let that matter at all, or I'll just stop doing it, you know. And you can't be stopped by that kind of stuff, but I do feel like there was stuff that, especially as a young person, that, you know, something hurt me and I was like, okay, let me close that door forever.
Oh my gosh, and I had a really hard time with, well, my mother had a really hard time with like my mental health stuff in general. And so I'm really, you say hypomania, and like literally my therapist and I are kind of circling that drain for me right now. And it's sort of a very, it's to me, I'm finding it very empowering not to have a label per se, but just to have an understanding of like what my brain is and how it works. Because, you know, when I was little, my pediatrician was like, I think she's depressed. And my mom lost it. Like, I love my mother. We have a very complicated, very tricky relationship. And she, as a nurse, has a really hard time bringing anything medical home. And I think that that was sort of an easy way to like kind of push that away. And I didn't know how to deal with that stuff at all. You know, like it was sort of a fake it till you make it situation with that. Cause it's like, I just feel so intensely all the time. Yeah. And you're just like, everything is the greatest or the worst. And it's like, you know, for me, I was always so frustrated because it felt like a very immature response. You know, it felt like that meant I wasn't grown up enough because, like, I, you know, just felt things very intensely.
Especially, like, I can't remember, like, even just being, I remember my first jobs, especially, but, like, even in my 20s, feeling like, oh, I've advanced to the point where, like, I can have this kind of job. Mm-hmm. But then the slap in the face of, like, a couple of different bosses were like, you got to work on your game face.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Because I can tell every emotion you have.
Uh-huh.
I can see it all, and that's not professional.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I would have that happen a lot.
I should be better at this. I should be better. Like, that helps, you know, to go home and be like, I'm a piece of shit. I'm a child. I threw tantrums when I was little, and clearly I'm, you know.
And I haven't gotten over it since, and this is just all repeating itself, and I just need to, oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to fix it for sure.
Oh my God, totally. It's just such a, oh, sorry, I saw some cute dogs.
Oh my
God, I'm so excited about the dogs. I really want to meet the dogs later.
That's gonna be what's waiting for you when you finish the podcast.
Oh my God, it's gonna be amazing.
They're not gonna let you down. They're pretty special.
And I'm such a huge dog person. I love.
Could that be any less surprising?
So
although
twist, right?
I there are so many different animals that I love. Like,
I love all animals.
Yeah,
I'm such an animal fan. They're just so sweet and pure and just like, they're all very nice, or they're just trying to live their lives. And like, because I was obsessed with cats growing up and then actually became more of a dog person. So I had this cat named Misty that I was obsessed with, like to the point where it would be, you know, in first grade, you would do the thing on the board. It was like, today is Wednesday and here's the date and the weather is this. And I would raise my hand every fucking time. Didn't matter if it was summer or winter, and I'd go, it's Misty, like my cat. And they'd be like, it's not, Alicia. It's just not. And I'd be like, but isn't it clever that my cat's named after a weather pattern? No, it's not. You're in first grade. That is nothing cute about that.
Oh, God. That's amazing.
They're just so sweet. They're just so sweet and wonderful. And I just, you know, I feel like the Nerdist office is a very dog friendly office. And like, I love that. I love being able to just, you know what? I need 5 minutes with Ghost, this corgi, and then I'll be able to get back to work. And
it's,
I'm more
very
productive.
Different. I agree with that. I think I definitely, especially, I didn't work in places where that was necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. but never was that more true for me than when I did this show Mutton Stuff a few times, which was on Nickelodeon Junior, which is a show that is predominantly cast of trained dogs.
Yes.
But there's also puppets and like tiny children. And
oh my
when
God,
I agreed
yes.
to do it, people were like, oh, you're going to be there forever. Like, what a nightmare. All three of those things. Those are all the hardest things
to work with.
Yeah. And I went and it was like the most smoothly running, like yes! everything was like, and just the version of the tremendous downtime you do tend to have on television sets, like that downtime was, it felt so non-existent because there was always a dog somewhere, if not 15 dogs.
Yes.
And like that
they
doesn't feel, that's not, yeah, that's not downtime. You're, it's yeah. not downtime. Like you want to know, you want to talk to the trainer. You want to find out like which tutu they prefer to
what
wear
tricks
most.
Do they know?
What tricks do they know?
Which are their favorite treats?
It's just fascinating. And so yes. the time flew by and having that energy, I think that's something that like we really as humans have figured out, at least this particular culture of, you know, but the thing that gets tricky about that is I had this long conversation about this recently, not online.
Oh,
so it's not available for anyone here
offline
in real life. I had an IRL conversation about
amazing.
Something.
How retro of you.
It was very retro. Where I sort of like, I went into this unhelpful spiral where I was like struggling a little bit with the like, first of all, a very, very close friend of mine has a marvelous dog rescue. Mm-hmm. You know, she's created an organization and like that's her life. And she's such a hero to me. But like there, I think there are versions of that where I kind of went into the spiral. I was like, oh no, I feel sometimes like it's so incredibly important, but that there's something so immediate and easy about helping animals in a mm-hmm. way that is so not true of humans. And so I really like went into this place because I was like, God, I love dog rescue. And like, oh, I love fostering, all this kind of ideas. And then I had that guilty moment where I was like, oh, part of this is like, there's a dog that needs your help. You save it. It loves you forever. End of story. Like mm-hmm. how simple
yeah.
versus like, here's a homeless person who's mentally ill who like, where do you start with that? And I think
yeah.
that's, I think that there's this, that sort of like our love of animals has kind of,
superseded our love of humans.
Yeah. And I mean, I think at our core it hasn't superseded it, but it is a replacement for how hard it is to be a human person and not know what approach to, it feels so overwhelming and mm-hmm. daunting and scary and sad.
Yeah.
And so there's something, once you turn it over to another species, you feel like you can do more. It feels like there's, you know, problem result, and you move on to the next dog
yeah.
or what have you.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I really, that's where, when I start to go down the guilt road, mm-hmm. I'm like, why am I not administering vaccines in Africa? Like I go
yes.
to that place where
oh,
I'm like,
God,
oh,
I'm
a waste of a person.
Oh my God.
I'm not spending my entire life trying
yep.
to save others' lives.
Yep.
That's a dark tunnel you can go into so
truly,
fast.
Truly, truly. I think it's, yes, I mean, I worry about that constantly, especially, you know, doing stuff in entertainment. You feel like this is the most superfluous thing. And you're just like, why am I doing this? I remember when I was little, I wanted to be the first woman president. And now I'm like, you know, this is amazing. I love, you know, talking and geeking out about shit and talking about, you know, amazing women and the things I want them to create. But I'm also just like, but I could be like writing policy and like trying to, you know, work in a homeless shelter, do all these things. And I get a tremendous amount of guilt. And then, yeah, you can sort of be like, I'm just helping animals or like giving to charity because it makes me feel better. It's like this response that's kind of selfish. And it's really tricky to come to terms with the fact that like you're a person, you can only do so much and you yeah. have to find the ways in which you can do the most good that you can for whatever person, place, or thing
yeah.
that you feel passionate about. And not everyone can be Mother Teresa, and not everyone can, you know, there's not enough room in the world for everyone to be that way, you know, because it's when you start to think about it in those extremes, you really, to kind of like bring yourself down to earth, you have to think about like, well, the planet can't be a bunch of Mother Teresa's, then literally what is the world, you know? There needs to be, not that there needs to be strife and problems in the world, it is just a natural occurrence, and so you have to you have to buck that impulse to sort of feel self-pity that you can't do enough, because it's just, it's even more counterproductive than only doing a little bit.
Well, yeah. And I think that the thing that I've kind of started coming around to, and we kind of talked about this a little bit on Fangirling on your show, is when you start to get the feedback loop in a good way of someone telling you like, yeah, but I, like, if I've had a bad day. And by the way, that was the other thing that totally blew me away. I don't know what, but I went to see George Saunders, who's this wonderful author in San Francisco, just for one night. And he was, someone said, like, I laugh so much when I'm reading your stories and stuff. And like, the way you bring humanity to me is both heartbreaking but uplifting. Mm-hmm. And like, part of that is the laughter. And like, who influenced you? You know, what are you? And so we start talking about like comedy and Monty Python and stuff and his influences. And I don't know why, again, this is like, it's not that it's not something I ever thought about before, but you know, when somebody just says something or there's a moment where it hits home and it hits a different part of your brain or your heart. But I had that moment of like, oh my God, you don't have to just inspire, like, I don't have to inspire a young girl to go do improv. Mm-hmm. I could inspire her to become a doctor. I'm not a doctor, but if something I did brought her joy and made her feel more grounded or inspired her for whatever her purpose is, then like, I'm affecting that into a field that I have absolutely no personal contact with or experience with. But that, like, that's one of the blessings of entertainment, I think, is not only can you give someone a boost or, you know, like, think about how much you rely on music and art to get you through. You know, it's like, 100%. For some reason, I couldn't make that connection for a long time. I was like, oh, no, I'm not like that. Like, I don't do that. I just do this, like, silly, dumb stuff that I like, but it's not, you know, helping anyone. And then when you start getting any kind of feedback that's like, no, this does, you had something to do with something that did really help me, then it does start to feel like, oh, okay, so it isn't that different from if I were to meet, you know, this singer or this actor and say, thank you, this really got me through a hard time, or an author. But that was the other thing. I was like, oh God, if I can, you know, if someone wants to listen to my podcast and they're becoming an EMT and that's really heavy stuff, and then they can laugh and that makes it easier for them to go back to their job, you know. So we are in a very privileged position in that you have the potential to impact people emotionally in a way that stretches beyond just your field. And that's not always true for people who are great at their jobs. They don't necessarily have those tendrils that can reach out and touch people in every walk of life. And so that's what I'm trying to embrace more of, is like, oh wait, this is great. And for me, it doesn't mean that I'm constantly politically tweeting, because I would disintegrate if that became my full-time job.
Beginning of the year.
I mean, that's just really hard. And so again, that's another place where you sort of go, well, where can I, you know, really get into the, you know, get into what feels important to me, and how do I have to protect myself and all that kind of stuff, which is an ongoing conversation, you know?
There's a lot of universality to the feelings that that things can bring you or bring to light from entertainment that transcend all of that stuff. And I think about that too. You know, when I was younger, before I started doing what I'm doing now, I was like scheduling commercials at MTV. It was my first job out of college, actually. And like, you know, thinking like, oh no, I'm gonna be like business and I'm gonna get through business. But then like, still at the same time, I was always gravitating towards these things and internalizing lessons and meanings and words from people and books and music and art that inspired me. And you know, it's I'm fortunate that I was able to take the 180 that I did to do what I'm doing now. But there's just so much to life that's universal, and there's so much to, especially what we get to do in this industry, that is just the simple act of normalizing feelings, you know, and the simple act of bringing to light a reality that is somebody's reality. And I, that's what I get so excited about with, with just being able to tell stories and, you know, being able to write scripts and, you know, random essays and things like that, where I can see these things that, you know, I struggle with or other people are struggling with, and allegorically sort of like really get into the meat and potatoes of that and just look at like, what is that? Is that a feeling? Is that a reaction? Is that a response? Is that, you know, something from my own past, you know, really kind of fucking with me in a way. I remember, I can't even tell you when I, the first season of Fangirling, I had a full on fucking breakdown making the show. It took until like halfway through this season of season two, like 2 years later, to really understand that like me taking on the act of doing the show, I was doubting literally every single fucking thing. And I was internalizing the negative from what people were saying, even if that wasn't what they were saying, because I grew up like, again, love my mother, bless her heart, but she's like, you can't be an actor and a performer. You can't be a singer. You can't be a writer. There are so many other talented people out there. Get some job security, you know, get some, you know, go into marketing if you want to do something creative, which I tried. And so the whole process of that was like me having to really face like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I've spent my whole life saying I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I'm not talented enough. Like, my mother loves me. If I was talented enough, she would have told me that I'm good enough, yeah, right? Like, that's what would have happened, because that's what movies and TV tell you happen, you know? But that's just not necessarily the case. And so it was this like crazy process where I do feel really bad for the production team at Nerdist that had to kind of deal with it, because the way I deal with things is very external. And I, you know, I say to them like, hey guys, I'm like going through really rough depression with this. Like, I just want you to know. And like, bless their hearts, like these older men are just sort of like, what? You, ooh. And I'm like, just don't handle me with kid gloves. It's the only thing I'm going to ask you not to do. And they're like, okay. It's like, yeah, you know, and it was just, it was such a confluence of all of that shit. And like, that doesn't come necessarily from like, oh, I did this one creative thing and it didn't work out. It just comes from like this experience, which is very universal, of like somebody telling you maybe you shouldn't believe in yourself and your dreams, and having to come to terms with that so much later. Cause I was like, no, you know, like, I don't know why I'm freaking out this much about this. Like, I just have to trust myself and just, you know, my ideas are good ideas, and I know that even if I don't know it until after the fact, like whatever. And
but isn't there also that third voice that's like, and also you're ruining this for yourself. Yeah. You're supposed to be so grateful right now. You're supposed to be on, this is supposed to be the happiest you've ever been. Yes. Instead, it's the most miserable. Oh, what a loser.
Yes, literally that whole thing where you're just like, you should be so much happier about this. And that was always the thing that was really hard when I was in my depression too, and I'm trying to make the show. And it's like really the first time I've ever like actively dealt with my depression too. I finally got a therapist at that time and a psychiatrist and all that. And it was just like, like I had like nothing, you know. It's just like you see me, I'm like this. And I was just sort of like this. Yeah. And I was just sort of like, I should be so fucking thrilled and grateful and happy and like bouncing through the office. And I'm just,
yeah,
oh my God, I'm just trash garbage and everything is terrible, and I'm making everything worse, and why am I not more excited, and everybody's telling me I should be excited, and like all of that stuff.
Yeah,
that just gets in the way of the bullshit. And I'm very thankful that I had that experience though too, you know. I just feel like I see everything, and this is like the cornball in me, but like I see everything that I've gone through as like a lesson that needed to be learned in order to do what I'm doing now. Like, I had to move to LA because I had to do something that was completely out of my comfort zone. I had to, you know, start freelancing and writing because I had to be less precious with my words. I had to gain the confidence that like my ideas are valid or worthy enough to be read by other people. And, you know, then like I had to learn how to have a thick skin with like doing, you know, working on the internet, which is a super fun and notoriously nice place for women.
Sure.
Especially in the nerd space.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's really interesting how I feel like life will give you exactly what you need, and you just have to find the way to make that, you have to look that in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that means ugly, scary, hard things, but ultimately I feel so thankful and grateful for all those struggles that I've had, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to deal with the dumb trolls telling me that I should go fuck myself every other day, or, you know, the naysayers in my own head and, you know, in my family, or, you know, what have you. It's the scariest, most radical thing I think a woman can do is believe in herself and believe that that's enough. And it feels so simple because that is just handed to a lot of people in certain areas of our society. And I think for a lot of women, it's just not the norm. And you feel very foolish kind of like coming to these realizations. I'm 32 years old. I feel ridiculous for like coming to these realizations as a 32-year-old. But, you know, I try to really internalize. I'm trying now, I should say, in the last few weeks of like trying to be a little bit kinder to myself and look at myself as like how my friends look, you know, like Rachel Hine, who's editor-in-chief of Nerdist, she's like, please don't talk about my friend like that. Like, I really don't like it. And like, I'm trying to be that level to myself so you can get to a place where it's like, yeah, I can just be this and this is enough. Yeah. You know, it's so hard. The world just really doesn't want you to be.
It's a lot of work. But I think your perspective on you know, that driving force for you of moving forward in that way and choosing to see your experiences that way is that's how I feel too. And I think that's what are the alternatives?
Yeah. And I
don't want any of those alternatives. No. I want to be happy where I want to be satisfied and grateful, even if I'm in the middle of a struggle.
Yeah.
I want to always be able to say I wouldn't change anything. And so if that's your kind of mission statement, then you're just going to keep holding yourself to that, and like that's going to keep propelling you forward because the alternative is to go, oh, okay, well, this, I guess I'm going to, what, I'm going to go backwards? Like, I don't know what, I'm going to regret everything,
or I'll just follow what somebody else says, because then that just leads to all of that like gross, churning insecurity. Am I lying to myself? Am I lying to other people? Do I really believe? Do I really want, like, you know, and you fall into not having your own ideas and sense of self.
Yeah.
And it's so much more freeing when you can just give yourself that. Like, you know, like there are so many things and reasons to be upset and anxious and worried and stressed out and fearful for the world and yourself and the people you love in it. So like, just give yourself that.
Yeah. Give yourself the foundation. Like we have to have the foundation to be strong enough to do everything else.
Totally.
I don't know if I've ever been more excited about a guest getting to do this MASH game who is a fangirl. The question is like, how do I, now I'm pressured myself to want to make sure I come up with great categories.
Oh my goodness, the pressure is on, Janet.
Okay, let's start with like a pretty staring me in the face one, which seems easy, which is three women alive or not alive from any era that you would love to collaborate on something with. And it can be, you can take yourself outside of like, even if you're like, well, I'm not a fine art painter, you could still be like, but yet Georgia O'Keeffe, like I would want to, you know, let's assume you have whatever skill you would need to have to do this collaboration. Three women from whenever in time, today to yesteryear.
Okay, well, first one is Carrie Fisher, no question. I would love to write a script with Carrie Fisher. Holy shit. Oh god, this is so tricky. Gosh, because I feel like I could go in so many directions.
I know, it's you're the best and toughest person to do this, I think.
I'm trying to think. Who, you know, I would love to do something musical with Nina Simone.
Great.
Because, I mean, what an incredible soul and, like, heartbreakingly beautiful voice. I also used to sing as a kid, so I love the music. I always go back to music. Yeah. Always. I like wrote songs when I was a kid. I still have my notebooks, and I still have the first song I ever wrote, and it was in third grade, and it was called "I'm Gonna."
I can't even. It sounds like an ambitious.
Song. I've always been very ambitious. I don't even think I realized the extent of it until I was much older. But, okay. Oh, my gosh. Okay, third. Jeepers. I feel like I could go so many ways.
I'm sorry to put you through
this. Totally okay. I'm like, do I want to go with, like, a novelist? Do I want to go with a director? Like, I would want to invent something with Hedy Lamarr.
Oh, great.
Fuck yeah. Hedy Lamarr all the way. She literally invented frequency hopping. And the reason that plane wings are the way they are is because of her.
Oh, like, my God.
She is low-key such a brilliant mind, and like nobody ever knew. There's a new documentary about her called Bombshell, and it's really, really great.
Oh, I gotta write that down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's super, super great, and you learn all about her crazy shit and how the government like stole her patents, and it's wild.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's so great. I actually had the director on fangirling a couple weeks back, and just amazing. Hedy Lamarr is amazing. So yeah,
I can't wait to watch. That's awesome. I can't wait to watch it. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, we got through that category. Okay. We did a great job.
I'm so proud of us.
I was so stressed.
I didn't
do anything. Okay, I gotta do the three movies that you can jump into and just be in that world. Ooh. You're not a character in the film. You're not reliving the plot. You're just experiencing the world.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say something that might be kind of weird. Annihilation.
Okay, great.
I want to go and like investigate that world. I want to be like a Tessa Thompson's character, but mm-hmm. gets out.
Right. Yeah. Spoiler alert. That's a key.
That's one.
That's a great answer. I completely agree.
Like, oh gosh, the visuals of that movie just absolutely kill me.
Yes.
Goodness gracious. I'm trying to think. It's movies, right? Movies. I would say Ratatouille.
Great.
So I definitely want Remy the rat to cook me dinner. And one more?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's think. It's got to be something spacey. Oh, Star Wars. Duh, Star Wars. I want to go to the galaxy far, far away.
Okay, great. Great, great, great. Okay. Yes. Okay, let's go into romantic.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go into romantic partners.
Let's go into boy crushes.
And it could be, you know, real person. It could be fictitious character person.
Okay.
Et cetera.
Okay, gosh, goodness gracious. I always feel like I have to be like kind of... Because, like, I interview famous people for a living, so it's, like, very weird to
me
to be like, oh, I would kiss that person in the mouth and then, like, have to go talk to them later. That is 100% happened before.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story off of the podcast about this, actually.
I can't wait.
Ooh, I'm, like, getting hot. I have a crush on every boy. This is such a problem. I am a nightmare.
We know you're a people lover, so there's no surprises there.
I know. Oh, gosh. Oscar Isaac. Want to smooch the most. Young Michael Caine. What a babe.
Okay.
What a babe young Michael Caine was. Holy shit. Goodness gracious. You know what? Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Oh, I can't.
Why can't I just do it? I was perfect at that for so long. Chiwetel Ejiofor.
No one is questioning.
I love Chiwetel.
Your ability to.
It was between him and Michael B. Jordan, honestly.
Oh, yeah. What a dreamboat.
I just saw Black Panther and like, yeah, truly. Everybody in Black Panther is the most attractive person that's like ever lived.
I gotta see it.
Oh my God.
I 100% know that. Side note, I believe I brought this up on the podcast recently. I'm sure I did because we're talking about Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
But I had that surreal experience. I absolutely did say this, but I will just tell you that I was at the grocery store. The Vanity Fair cover that he was on was in
my God.
And then I was like looking at it, and then I was like, and then I looked up and he was checking out just past like 5 feet away from his LA. Cover. I was like, well, that happened.
Yep.
And doesn't it make you just kind of amazing? Yeah.
So yes,
that happened. Okay. Third category is three foods that in this alternate universe are not bad for you, whereas they might be in this one for some reason or other that you can have in perpetuity. It's actually good for you. It could be as general as, you know, pizza, or it could be as specific as like this one chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think I'm just going to go with the three P's.
Great.
Pizza, pasta, potatoes.
Great.
Those are my lifeblood.
Wonderful.
I love them.
Wonderful. Agreed.
Yeah. All of that. And I'm keeping it very generic so I can try all sorts Oh, things. Yeah.
No, you got, this is a real, like, you got a Pandora's box of deliciousness here.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Okay. Three talents that you wake up with tomorrow that you have sort of downloaded Matrix style. They require no practice.
Okay. Awesome. Painting for sure.
Great.
Dancing, like world class, like, so you think you can dance, can do all the dances, dancer. Great. There's a dance class that I love that I'm obsessed with, and it's called 5-6-7 Sweat.
What I'm hearing.
Oh yeah, it's like a Broadway themed dance.
That's great.
Literally, it brings me so much joy, and every time I go, I just want to be strong like a dancer.
Yeah.
I just want to be a dancer. I'm a dancer. And it's like every movement I make moving forward is like, I'm a dancer.
That's right.
I'm a dancer.
That's right. I love it. God, I really, really great. Okay. Dancing. What's your third one?
You know what? I really honestly, and this is going to sound so boring, but I could not be more terrible at math. So like, I wish I was good at math.
Listen, I do too. And I wish I enjoyed it. I wish there's nothing more satisfying than a great math problem.
That would be great. Makes me want to vomit.
Pleased. I think that's a good use of the category. I really do. I very much approve. Okay. Let's do three TV shows from any era that you wish you could have written for, and that like writing for would be so fun and easy. Easy and a joy.
Okay. I Love Lucy.
Great.
30 Rock.
Great.
And there's a few ways I could go with this. There's like three shows that are kind of circling in my head right now that I feel like I could go with. And I think, you know, I'm going to go with Handmaid's Tale.
Great.
Everything that show has done thus far has been flawless and incredible.
Agreed.
It kills me.
Side note, I gotta say, I wish people would not in any way say that Margaret Atwood is an anti-feminist.
Yeah, no.
I'm really struggling with that. I understand that our world is moving forward, and I understand that there are things that, you know, some like different generations are used to or write off, but like we need to be a little bit careful on that because you start getting into like, don't shit on the people who came before you who spent their entire life.
I know. It's like the people
getting us
like,
to the point
off,
we are
Gloria
now.
Steinem. Yeah. And I'm like, you can't say
you
fuck
can't,
off to Gloria Steinem.
You
I'm
can't
sorry.
Do it. You can't do
yeah,
it.
She can have
that
some...
was really heartbreaking. That was like one of my biggest struggles with everything that's been going on. Was like, you know what? I'm never going to say, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, Margaret Atwood. I'm just never going to say
never,
it.
It's never going to happen. She, listen, generational divides are real and they happen. Yeah. And it's, you know, I talk about this with my grandfather a lot, actually, because he has such a hard time. And my great-grandmother, actually, who's still alive, she's 103, which is crazy. And, but like she, you know, both of them have seen so much of the world pass, and like, they're just like, it's just, there are certain things that certain generations just aren't cognitively going to be able to understand in a way that we understand them. And like, I think that while you can say yes, no, and here's why maybe this is slightly problematic, you can't be like, you're a trashy man because of this. Like, I think we need to have a little bit more kindness and come to these conversations with like a bit more empathy and nuance.
And guess what, guys? We're all going to be in that position.
Oh, yeah.
If you think that we're finished evolving. Yeah. If you think that as a 25-year-old girl, you've finished evolving
as
the human race, and that when you're 90, someone isn't going to get up in your face and go like, you're stupid. Yeah. I can't believe you think this is how life should be.
Everyone in like 5 years will be like, I can't believe they had genders. Like, I can't believe you guys were like male and female. Like, you know, like that is, I've said that, my roommate and I've
I'm ready to feel stupid. I just want to be treated with as much respect as possible as I'm struggling with whatever it is I'm struggling with as an 85-year-old person. And likewise, I would like to show the respect and compassion to people who are in that position now.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
Absolutely. As long as like forward progress keeps moving forward. Like, I know we're all going to fall behind at some point. Yeah. I just want progress to keep happening.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Well said.
Thank you.
Okay. That's good off a little diatribe. Yeah. Okay. Next is three places, and they don't have to be in real life. They could be other places you would have a vacation home. So it could be something more magical, or it could be a mix. It could be, you know, a real place. Ooh. If getting there were no problem.
Oh my God. Okay.
One would be in London, just because I love London so much.
Right.
I would love to have a vacation home in space that sort of orbits like a satellite, orbits the planet, so I can see it constantly and see all the beautiful lights and also have beautiful views of the moon.
Great.
Definitely some sort of beautiful spaceship. And it also has some sort of like terraforming little nook mm-hmm. inside
like Elysium, if Elysium weren't represented.
Exactly. The like, don't ask for much.
Yeah.
Okay, so London, space. You know, I want a bubble underwater too.
Oh, great.
All the way at the bottom of the ocean, or like tethered close to the bottom of the ocean so that I can check out all that beautiful bioluminescent light.
It's that a gives little scary. Me the heebie-jeebies. I know. Yeah. That's a real like face your fear. Like, I would love to feel comfortable in the underwater realm.
Oh my gosh.
Because I hate how uncomfortable I would feel in the underwater realm.
So you're not like a Blue Planet fan then?
I mean, I am, but I just am terrified. Yeah. I find it all terrifying.
It is scary.
And not in a way that, it's like I feel total awe and respect and like excitement and thrill about it. But I'm very aware that like my body was not. It doesn't exist. Yeah, it doesn't exist to be like swimming among the whales in the Arctic Ocean.
Yeah.
Okay. And then final category. Ooh, final category. That's a toughie.
Can't believe we're at the end.
Let's do three. Oh, well, let's do three musicians that three different musicians that, as it happens, each wrote an album for you, about you, like dedicated to you. It's sort of like their personal gift to you. Like, this is all you.
Thinking about this.
I wish. So okay, we're gonna make it come true. We're gonna make it come true.
Patti Smith, number one, no question. Ray LaMontagne for sure. And and Ryan Adams, always and forever in my heart. Ryan Adams. His songwriting is just some of the most beautiful songwriting out there.
Great. He really is great. I haven't listened to him in a while. I gotta do a reboot.
Him and Jenny Lewis's band Nice as Fuck at the Greek a little while ago.
Oh, that was a great show.
It was so good.
Yeah,
so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, love Jenny Lewis too.
Get right back in. Yeah, I do. Shout out to Jenny Lewis. Okay, so I'm going to do my little thing where I say tell me when to stop, so I can do my eeny meeny in a second. Okay. So just tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this, do some quick non-calculations, and come back with your 100% guaranteed mesh future.
I'm so excited. God, I'm so ready and excited.
Okay.
Oh my God, my future.
Let's see. Where do I want to start? Number one, I will congratulate you on your beautiful apartment in London.
Oh my God, yes.
Feels right.
Yeah.
Feels very right. I want to congratulate you. By the way, this apartment, this vacation home in London that you have, this beautiful apartment, you have this, that your whole like studio where you do all your painting.
Yes.
That's very easy to imagine for me. I'm assuming that at some point, you know, if you're feeling stuck with an idea or whatever, you just put on that album that Patti Smith wrote for you. And that just like propels you back into productivity.
You become a literal superhero.
Probably to the point, and like you're gonna need a lot of sustenance while you're busy cranking away on all this fine art. So I want you to know that you get unlimited pizza with zero ramifications.
Yes.
Pizza of all shapes and sizes and delicious tastes.
All this New York pizza I'm dreaming of. All the New Haven pizza dreaming of it.
Yeah. And then also, like, listen, if you want to take a break and go a place that's nearby but also completely imaginary, you can go into the animated world of Ratatouille. Have some delicious food cooked for you.
I love how food-centric this is right now, too.
I'm also enjoying it because I'm hungry. What else can I tell you? I could tell you that you have a wonderful collaboration with Hedy Lamarr that could span any number of things.
Oh,
I feel like
God.
There's probably a song about your collaboration with Hedy Lamarr on your Patti Smith album.
Oh, probably. That feels right.
I loved the writing on A Handmaid's Tale. You really brought some wonderful special stuff to that, and you're doing all of this with your companion Oscar Isaac.
Oh my god.
Well done you.
What
well
am
played,
I
my friend?
Literally
well
living
played.
The best world's life ever.
Well played indeed.
Thank you so much, Janet.
It's my sincere pleasure. Alicia, I'm so glad we were able to do this. I love that we're going to do like a back to back with the fangirling episode and this, so it's fresh in everyone's mind. Where can people find you on social media, etc., and then that'll wrap us up.
Yeah, I'm at Alicia Lutz on all the things because, you know, I had to be the only Alicia Lutz on all the things.
You've earned it.
I've earned it, damn it. But yeah, mostly Twitter and Instagram is where I live.
Great. So, great. Yeah. And guys, I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.